Welcome to this podcast on the consumer duty and preparing the annual report. My name is Darren Allen. I'm a partner at Shoesmith, and I'm joined by my fellow partners, Wayne Gibbard and Suzanne Taylor. As we record this podcast, it's nearly 7 months, actually, since the consumer duty was implemented. And so what we thought we'd do in the next 20 or so minutes is really look at what's coming down the track, what the firms need to be aware of, what will the FCA be looking at, with a focus on the annual report, which is due on the 31st of July of this year. We've had various speeches from the FCA, Nisha Arora, for example, talking about not once and done, which is really all about cultural change, making sure that you continue to embed the consumer duty. There will be a focus from the FCA on whether implementation plans have been implemented properly, what's outstanding, and how does this impact on customer outcomes. We've seen a lot of focus when speaking to clients about outcomes and testing of outcomes, and also on governance structures. How can you ensure that the appropriate management information is getting to senior individuals? And then finally, there's a focus on ensuring that the closed book review is undertaken by the 31st of July 2024. So Wayne, let's start with you and what you're seeing from the FCA. I've seen the FCA asking firms for data. We've had various survey reports issued recently. Data on things like how many products and journeys are in scope, where the gaps remain, which is interesting in itself because it suggests that there's an acceptance by the FCA that firms haven't done everything they should have done by the 31st of July 2023. But what are you seeing?
To make an obvious point, consumer duty remains an absolute cornerstone of what the FCA concentrating on. It's the absolute bedrock of their business plan and how they're viewing the market. As a result of that, what we're seeing is a lot of activity with firms, and indeed most recently, only yesterday, we've seen outputs about good practice and areas of improvement, and also some feedback in relation to a survey that was conducted with around 650 firms. So we'll refer to that a little bit later on in this podcast. But specifically, I think what we've started to see is the FCA taking an approach using consumer duty to actually now look at specific products where they're making changes. If we dial the clock back, we've seen quite a lot of work within the investment market. So changes to fee structures, there's the well-documented kind of processes around that with some of the large firms who've had to completely remodel some of their pricing practices, that's affected share prices. I think also most recently, we've seen interventions in respect of gap insurance, where the FCA have been using data collated over actually now many months and years to use the lens of consumer duty to ask those firms to really interrogate that product and demonstrate that it adds value and meets good customer outcomes. So we've seen lots of these informal interventions and encouragement, if I can put it that way, from the FCA to look at what's going on. And I think that's going to continue. Certainly, speaking to firms, there's still lots of data being requested about embeddedness of consumer duty, and particularly where firms have got gaps to address. So I think the annual report is going to be an important piece in that jigsaw for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think very much picking on that same theme, we heard consistently over the last couple of years that the FCA views itself as a data-driven regulator. Like Wayne says, we are now seeing that come to light. Wayne's talked about some of the products where we're seeing them take action, but actually it's also in the more business as usual themes in your products that we're seeing it. So for example, what information can the FCA get from open sources? There is lots out there. And what we are seeing is that driving investigations and information requests into complaints, into fraud, into vulnerable customers. And actually for businesses, a lot of this information is in the public domain. You look at social media and you will see evidence of complaints, themes and persistent issues around fraud, etc. Fraud is in the press every day because it's public, it gets to the papers. And actually what we are seeing now is the FCA accessing this information and saying, actually, we want to take a little bit closer about this. We're seeing your name persistently coming up in these areas, and therefore we now want some information for you so we can look at it. And we're going to look at it through a consumer duty lens because you should have known about this. And therefore, why didn't you pick this up when you did your consumer duty review? Which I think is a change from what we have seen over the last couple of years.
That's interesting, isn't it? I think we're not seeing any enforcement cases yet. I think there's anecdotal evidence that the FCA is looking at a number of firms in relation to the consumer duty. But I see the annual report as being quite an important moment for firms and the FCA, because I think that will provide a significant amount of data for the FCA, and which will lead to action being taken by supervision and potentially enforcement. Suzanne, what are the challenges for firms in relation to the putting together a cohesive, appropriate annual report?
We're going to touch a little bit later on what should be in a good annual report, but I think we think about it as being a assessment of whether a firm is delivering good outcomes for its customers, and the board being able to demonstrate that. And I think that all comes back to outcomes and the data which you have to demonstrate that you are delivering good outcomes. It was interesting in the Wayne has referenced the information released from the FCA yesterday. Amongst that was a survey. And I think it was 28% of firms said they have found outcomes monitoring to be the most difficult part of Consumer Duty to implement. I would say that is very consistent with what we are seeing. I think there is a real approach by firms to say, well, we used to get this data for TCF, for treating customers fairly, and therefore, how can we adapt that to show good outcomes? And the FCA has been really clear that that isn't enough. Again, in the good practices and bad practices that were released yesterday, they are saying, actually, just adapting what you were doing already is not sufficient. We know the FCA has said this is a paradigm shift, and therefore it requires that change within businesses. So for me, I think the biggest challenge is for firms now, 5 months out from their annual report is, what data would you be putting into that annual report? Do you have that data? Is it robust? Is it sufficient? Is it just what you were doing already? Because we know that's not going to be good enough. Because actually, that pulling together that annual report is a significant project. And so now you need to be making sure that you have the foundations in place to give you the content, the data and the information to actually be able to write that annual report. Because if you leave that till May or June, you're simply not going to have enough time.
I would completely echo all of that. I think that the data we're seeing as a real challenge. Firms are used to handling financial data and providing an analysis over that. But to put that in context with the lens of good outcomes, I think firms are really grappling with that challenge. I think the other discussions that we're having and trying to encourage firms to put these into governance cycles quickly, typically in a large firm with different committees and different structures, actually mobilizing that report, pushing it through the relevant governance structures to make sure you got appropriate input and oversight before it arrives at the board, I think is important. And as you say, with 5 months to go, starting those governance cycles now, we really must accelerate with what's happening there.
There is a real danger, and I see this actually in some of the discussions I'm having with financial services firms. There's a danger of regarding outcomes monitoring testing as a difficult bucket, and then putting it on the side of the desk and leaving it for a bit. And I think the point you made, Suzanne, is that if you do that, you simply won't have time to A, put in place monitoring and testing to provide useful data for that report, and it will be evident from the report you've not done it. And that I think will be picked up by the FCA.
I agree completely. And just picking up on the point Wayne said, actually, we all know how difficult it is to get a slot at a board meeting. Yeah. So actually now, 5 months out, have you got an hour at your July meeting to sign off on this report? Because it isn't going to be enough to have 5 minutes and rubber stamp it. You need to be able to demonstrate discussion, challenge, etc. So actually just the bare minimum logistics of, as Wayne said, have you got your committees in place building up to it? But actually, have we ensured that, frankly, a summer holiday board meeting is going to have everyone there who should be, and that we have adequate time to cover it, and that can't be replaced by a discussion about a new product. It can't be replaced by that. And that comes on to the cultural piece, which I know we will pick up again later, of prioritising this and making sure it is business critical for your business.
Yeah. And it reflects on governance as well, because if you've not got something to board in an appropriate time, what was the Consumer Duty champion doing? What were the board doing? What were the head of risk doing? The whole governance structure is then put under the microscope, whereas really the focus should be on Consumer Duty and getting that report. And you touched earlier, many people listening to this are going to maybe struggling to visualise the right format for the annual report. What should it look like? What should it cover? What would the FCA expect to see? So thoughts, I know we've been advising clients in relation to this, but thoughts on that, Wayne?
Point of reflection on it, speaking to firms and more generally across the different sectors, the report is actually a lot longer than perhaps people may originally anticipate. And I think this comes back to the point of what data is supporting it. So, you know, in conversation, we've observed some firms relying too heavily on static data pools to demonstrate outcomes. So, for instance, looking at telephony performance or customer service statistics, it's an indicator, possibly a lag indicator, but it doesn't really tell you about the outcome. So to your point about end-to-end customer journeys and making sure you're monitoring all of that is fundamental to the report. The FCA have been very clear that this is an important, if not the key, piece of governance within a firm, the annual report and presentation to the board. So as a result of that, it's got to be all-encompassing. And when we start to consider the requirements that are in Print 2A and more generally, actually, we need to create a narrative through this. It's actually telling a story of the business for the last 12 months, but also the next 12 months or relevant period. So, you know, there's a summary to bring to the attention of the executive the key points. I think also we would expect the consumer champion to have a particularly active voice, albeit not sole voice, in the report. So I think there's a good introduction from him or her. There's a reconfirmation, a recontracting of the strategy. Mm. So what is the actual purpose of the business? Is that still fit and consistent with the outcomes for Consumer Duty? I think also then it's important to have a view of the horizon and the macro effects on a firm. You know, we're living in exceptional times, which you seem to be saying consistently over the last few years, but cost of living crisis, potential changes to the political system, interest rates, all of these things may have an influence on the firm or products or more particularly customers. So I think it's important to have that macro view as well as the horizon of what's the regulatory landscape going to look like for the firm. So once we've built that narrative and the story of what's actually going on, I think you've then got to look actually the products themselves. So what's the oversight, what's happened to the products. Mm-hmm. You can start to import some of the data, some of your monitoring. You need to have a view on the distribution strategy. Is that still consistent and fit for purpose? Where do you use outsourced providers? What's the oversight do you have of those? Are there any issues that the board should be aware of? And then I think there's a view on some of the cultural elements, which is, you know, difficult to put down in MI, provides that narrative within the report itself. I think one of the final things I'd probably just reflect on is it's really important that the report recommends or at least drives action. You know, the board should be looking at all of these outputs and then creating a plan for where there are gaps and there's likely to be some and what they're going to do about them. And that prioritization, I think, is really critical for the success of the firm in demonstrating the oversight of Consumer Duty. So comprehensive, lengthy, like I say, it's kind of telling a story of the business.
I think it's really important, and not only to have the report available, but also to have all the management information that you have referred to in the report, in case the FCA does request that. I think it's going to be really important. I think it's really interesting is around culture. As you mentioned, culture can't be measured by a percentage, a red, amber, green metric on management information. And actually, I think for businesses to reflect on how Consumer Duty has changed their culture is probably one of those questions that you're not going to answer in the run-up. You need to really reflect on that now. I think, again, the good and bad practices the FCA released yesterday had some really interesting points around that. For example, good examples are businesses accelerating business changes to deliver better customer outcomes. So looking at where you've done your root cause analysis and it's identified an issue that causes customer harm, being able to demonstrate that you've accelerated that over other areas of business improvement is going to be key to demonstrating good culture. Being able to demonstrate that focus is on customers at board level. You know, the FCA specifically refers to compliance leading on compliance issues being a poor practice. How often do we see that when we're dealing with our clients? You know, these things come from compliance first rather than being a business-driven decision. And I think the FCA is really clear that that's what people will need to be demonstrating to show that the firm has a culture of delivering good customer outcomes throughout their business. And again, another point that the FCA is raising all the time from good practices, what data have you had and how have you acted on that data throughout the year? It feels like that's been the theme of this podcast, right? You know, data. But what interventions have you made as a result of data you've received, and can you demonstrate that these have delivered good customer outcomes? That is the level of information the FCA will want to see in this report.
And you touched upon the kind of governance issues about challenge at that board level, which I think is crucial. But what about the preparation of the report itself? Who signs off on that? I mean, throughout the whole Consumer Duty implementation period, there was a debate raging in some firms as to whether it should be first line of defence or second line of defence. What are you seeing in terms of who's signing off on the report? Who is going to sign off on the report that goes to the board?
My observations are those tensions or that debate, if you like, are still continuing. What it's fair to say, and I think the FCA have pulled this out of their recent good practice note yesterday, is they expect everybody to be involved in this. It's not the job of a single person, albeit there may be somebody with allocated responsibilities. It has to be across the whole of the business. They expect the Consumer Duty, as it requires, to weave into every aspect of the business, from product design through to operations and everywhere. It's true, and I think it probably will happen that somebody will hold the pen to create that narrative and that story so that the information is presented in a consistent way and you don't have lots of disjointed effort. But I think it has to be a collective effort from the firm.
Yeah, I agree completely with that. And I think you've summed it up perfectly, Wayne. This is not going to be the job of one person. This is a team of people. So have you identified that team? Do you know who those people are going to be? And actually making sure each and every single person on that team knows that they are responsible for a section, I think is really, really key.
So I thought I'd, just before we end this podcast, to touch upon closed products, because that has to be done by the end of July 2024. And but anecdotally, and it is only anecdotal, I see less attention being paid to this than on the first stage. And I wonder what you were seeing in relation to closed book products.
I think we've referred to a sector being under a lot of scrutiny. I think what we are seeing at the moment is prioritisation, which is probably reactive. Mm-hmm. It's fair to say we're seeing people dealing with a lot of information requests across a lot of different subjects. We're seeing people dealing with supervision activity. We've just talked about the annual report and everything that needs doing in the next 6 months on that. So I agree. I think closed book has perhaps fallen behind those areas on the priority list. I have some sympathy with clients actually on that, because I think there is just so much for them to do. I think there is also perhaps a little bit of false comfort being drawn from the fact we've done open book reviews and therefore we know what we're doing. We've built the framework, we've built the tests, and therefore we can just roll that out for closed products. I think there needs to be some caution around that, because I think, you know, closed products naturally have a slightly different focus. So when did you last re-engage with those customers? Is the product still fit for them? What are you doing? You know, if you haven't spoken to a customer for a while, how do you know they're not vulnerable? I do think there are slightly different challenges actually around that. And that I think firms do need to just look at, whilst they can use some of the frameworks that were built last year, I think they need to be making sure that they are looking at them through a slightly different lens and leaving themselves time to make sure that actually their closed book reviews are being carried out properly. Because as we saw this year, with the FCA asking for implementation plans in August, September, we expect that the same will happen in relation to closed products in the summer of this year.
Sheldon Mills yesterday in a speech was referring to closed products, and he's kind of made exactly those points. You know, there's definitely a bandwidth issue for firms in terms of capacity to really focus on these issues, but it's evident and it's very clear that the FCA expect firms to address these, and they expect it to be delivered in accordance with the regulatory timetable. And I think, to be fair, this has been widely communicated. This is not a surprise deadline. You know, this is in we've known about this for 3 years now. So I think the FCA are expecting this to happen and happen consistently well.
If you are properly embedding culture, then a number of issues should naturally emerge anyway, actually. I think yesterday's paper talked about exit fees. You know, if you have a closed product and you've got exit fees, well, you should be asking yourself whether they're appropriate to be charged in relation to that particular product.
Yeah.
A lot's going to happen between now and, the next 4 or 5 months. So what are your concluding thoughts on the challenges over the next 6 months? There's quite a bit still for firms to do. It's an ongoing project, but what are the kind of the major challenges as you see them?
We've obviously spoken about the annual report and closed products, and those are clearly things that firms need to engage with and deal with. On the more macro, you know, this remains a sector that is under significant challenge and strain. There is lots and lots of regulatory intervention, investigations, And obviously, particularly in the automotive finance space, we're seeing a lot of operational stress being placed on firms to cope with some challenges in that marketplace. So I think for me, there is a real capacity issue in terms of physical resource for people to deal with all of these things, but also the intellectual challenge of how you cope with all these multiple challenges that are affecting a firm at the same time as trying to drive revenue and continue to be profitable in a very difficult market economy, let's be honest. So I think there is a lot of pressure for firms, and I think it's just that intensity of regulatory scrutiny and pressure which is going to persist certainly for the next 6 months.
And I think, again, keeping this fairly macro, I think prioritisation is so key. You know, get that implementation plan out. What still needs doing? Yeah. Where are your biggest risks? And, you know, we regularly see clients who are under-resourced. That problem is not going to be solved in the next 6 months. It's to deliver meaningfully on what you need to deliver. So therefore, it has to be a matter of prioritisation. And to come back to the point we touched on earlier, actually building that team within the business. So actually making sure you are using, upskilling your first line of defence to, you know, be able to deliver what they can deliver on a consumer duty perspective, and prepare a really honest prioritisation plan to make sure that you are dealing with the things that cause the most risk, and be able to demonstrate that to the regulator if questioned. I don't think we are dealing with a reality where people can do everything they need to do in the next 6 months, unfortunately.
I think that's an important point from the kind of enforcement perspective, because I think if the FCA come and visit a firm, look at various documents, the fact you've got a plan in place and the fact that you've not kind of missed something, but a plan to address key harms, key risks, it won't mean that you won't be placed in enforcement, but it will give you some protection, and it will at least enable you to tell the FCA that you've planned for it, and that you've highlighted the key risks going forward. That's been really helpful, Wayne Suzanne. Thank you for your insights. If anyone listening has any questions in relation to anything that has been discussed today, then please let me know at darrenallen@shoesmiths.com. We're happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.